हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay, page 16, Sutra 2.2.2. Pravritesh cha, pravittehe, because of the activity, cha, and, only. Pradhan is not the cause of the world, because even Pradhan cannot act without a conscious agent. Sutra Prakashika. Herein, the Sutrakar puts emphasis that the unconscious matter is put into motion only if a sentient being takes the lead. Siddhanta. Pradhan is not the cause because action, pravittehe, of the insentient cannot take place without a conscious director. Pradhan begins to produce when there is an agent to invoke the insentient matter, just as a chariot driver is necessary to make the chariot move. This is applicable to the argument that trees, though insentient, bear fruit. Trees bear fruit because of a controlling conscious entity, Brahman as the Antaryami. This will be clarified elsewhere. The word cha is for emphasis, or it indicates because we see the inclination to do something such as, I do this, only in conscious entities. Insentient pradhan cannot be the cause. Purvapaksha. The cause of producing the world comes from superimposition of qualities exchanged between Purusha and Prakriti by proximity. Right? So they're sticking to their philosophy, right? Is the proximity, which is the cause of superimposing qualities, inherent in them, said Bhava, or is it a transformation within Purusha and Prakriti? Uttara. It cannot be something inherent in them, since even the liberated souls would develop superimposition. Right? Because if it's inherent in the souls, then by the soul being in contact with Prakriti, it would take on Prakriti's qualities, even though they're liberated. And if their whole purpose of their philosophy is to become liberated and free from all this, the effect of the superimposition or the creation, then they wouldn't be able to be liberated because it's inherent. Just by being around each other, they would take on the qualities of each other. Right? Does that make sense? The pradhan would take on that quality, the soul would take on the quality to enjoy, and all, that's what's the cause of their difficulty. So that can't be inherent. It cannot be some transformation from within Prakriti, since then Prakriti would be the cause of superimposition. Because then Prakriti is supposed to go back to its natural state. So their idea is that the soul goes back to its natural state, the pradhan goes back to its natural state. But the point is if it's inherent in either of them, that wouldn't happen. Pradhan wouldn't go back to being, homogeneous and in harmony. The soul wouldn't go back to being peaceful. Whereas you argue that Prakriti takes up the superimposition as an effect in order to appear conscious and thus create the world. And it cannot be a transformation of Purusha, Jiva, since according to your philosophy, Jiva does not undergo any transformation. Right? So this is the problem. They say these things, and because it seems logical to the mind because of a particular attachment, then we don't look further. Does that make sense? So, the cleverness in any of these philosophies is their ability to find that point which, saying it, no one asks any more questions.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Maharaj, it is very common.
It's common in everything.
Yes.
Like that. You see in the... Yeah, the economic, political, judicial field, there's points where you just say this point, and then suddenly there's no need of any further evidence. So it's a very standard thing. That's why, you know, people will connect to political correctness or, you know, some other kind of judicial aspect, because just by saying that thing, then it's done.
Yes.
You know, like the, yeah. So it's just how they attribute. Like, I don't know if you heard the news that just came. It was in America, in Pittsburgh, not Pittsburgh, somewhere in Pennsylvania. They just had Pittsburgh. They just had some guy comes into a synagogue there and just starts shooting and killed like so many people. The police showed up, you know, some of them got killed and this and that. So finally they, you know, caught the guy and I think he's in the hospital or whatever. So it's interesting. Somebody pointed out that, it, you know, on this point that in the news, they always refer to the guy as the shooter, which is the standard way they refer to it. If the guy's white. Right? Now if he had not been white, you know, especially if he had been, you know, of any kind of Arabic background, then it would just be the terrorist.
Yes.
You understand? So when you say the shooter, it's just it happens. You know? There's nothing more really to see in that. But if you say the terrorist, now it keeps going. You understand? So it's just a matter of finding those words or explanations that by saying it, it just stops the discussion. So then they come up with these things. Oh, but what about this? Oh, the Purusha doesn't transform. What about this? Oh, it's proximity. So there's superimposition. It just, you just say those and it go, oh, yeah, that sounds logical. So you don't actually think. You just end there. Yes.
We can say we also have faith. Because we say Krishna is inconceivable. And we say pastimes.
Pastimes, but yeah. Why? What's?
Because if we explain, for example, why this happened to this devotee, I'm not talking about general devotees, like the acharyas or something. We always say it's pastime. So we don't go further into this.
No, but we can if we want. That's the point, is we can. See, in the Vedic, in the Vaishnava Vedanta, especially in the Chaturveda Veda Tattva, we don't have any dogmas that are undiscussable. We can discuss it, though we generally don't need to. But you can, because it's just like, say, Arjuna, okay, he is overwhelmed by illusion, and then the Gita is spoken. So how could they be overwhelmed? So we'll say it's the pastime of the Lord. But the point is there is a reason why it's a devotee and not someone else. Other people, it's not that they would be overwhelmed by Maya, because they already are. So there's no need for the Lord to get involved. Right? Maya is already controlling them. Because you have to have someone who's going to understand it in a perfect way. So what he will do in that discussion there, it may take us a lifetime to appreciate. But the point is that's where the example comes in, is the acharyas can do that. So then the devotee is chosen for that, because otherwise is the Lord going to interact with just anyone else? So he'll only interact with devotees. But to have such an interaction, the devotees aren't an illusion. So therefore Yogamaya has to put him in illusion. But it's Yogamaya, not Mahamaya. So it's just how the Lord interacts. Because you have to set example. That's the whole point of the material world. Is you give the process, you give an example of that process and show persons who are, have become successful by it. So we can discuss it. But what you have to be careful of is, in this case, it would be here the opposition is throwing these things up to stop the conversation. So that you don't think anymore on their philosophy. But it can also be used the other way. Right? It means the opposition, let's say, to what you're saying, they'll throw these out about quoting things from our philosophy with an idea that there's nothing more to discuss here. And so therefore, then they come to the conclusion, you're wrong. Right? So it's like, either you throw it up and no more discussion, I'm right, or I throw it up and no more discussion, you're wrong. But you see, it's conditioned nature, because otherwise we can discuss anything. you know, why the transcendental nature is there, you know, Krishna's position, anything like that. So we don't have a problem discussing it. It's just that in the assembly of devotees, generally you don't need to. Like that, it's been explained and it's accepted, the faith is there. But for those who don't have the faith, that's why we start on the more technical kind of things in establishing the Lord's position. Like that. And then we go from there. Is that so? Yeah, so you just have to, if somebody's trying to do that to you, you just have to catch them in their own game. Oh, I see.
Okay. Can you say that this is the goal of philosophy, to explain things as they are?
The philosophy is, yes, it's supposed to give light to. It means, we see in the first shloka of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's saying that the whole purpose of all this, you know, philosophical discussion is to be able to tell the difference between what's matter and what's spirit. Because it's not like here, they can't tell the difference. Right? They don't understand the soul is spiritual, the material energy is material. Soul is conscious, material energy is unconscious. So they can't tell the difference. It means they're discriminating below this point, but when it gets up to that real crux, they can't. Because, so in other words, they're not in any way trying to give up the ikar and the sharir, that I'm the controller and enjoyer. Because that's the ultimate point. They want to get liberated to enjoy. And as Purusha, then they're the controller, their position remains. So you see that in all the philosophies. You know, all the six philosophies, is they don't give up the idea I'm the controller and enjoyer. Only in Vaishnava Vedanta, then it's I'm not the controller, Krishna's the controller, and I'm his servant. And so everything is about his enjoyment, right? So that's like devotional service in a nutshell. So that's the only place where they're willing to give that up. And that's why then they can understand the Lord. While the other six schools, they can't. They can't understand. Does that make sense? So that's the you could say the point that makes the difference between them. You know, that simple point. Do they accept surrender to the Lord or not? So whether you're following a Vedic, you know, philosophical basis or you're not, the common thing will be they're all materialistic because they don't accept the position of the Lord and their relationship with Him and surrender in that natural relationship. So that's what makes them either spiritual or material. They may be, the Vedic may be much more refined in the material, you know, knowledge and logic and everything like that. Like you see, it was popular back like in the 1800s and that to study the Western Upanishads and that by the intellectuals because they thought it was just so intriguing. Like that. But they can't see beyond what these materialists are seeing. These six schools. Because there's no question of understanding the actual nature of the soul and surrendering to Krishna. Right? So you can't understand. There's always going to be bewilderment. Because where does the point go wrong? The actual point go wrong. Means below this point, then much of the time they may have some very nice points, you know, and be quite correct. And there'll be different angles because the Vedic literature gives so many different angles on how you can categorize, let's say, the elements themselves. How many elements are there? So you can categorize them as, you know, as they did as nine, you know, the Mahabhutas and earth, I mean, and mind, intelligent, false ego. So you have eight plus, oh no, that's already in the mind. So that's that. How did they do it as seven? Oh, okay, no. Yeah, that's a different. They take the tanmatras, you know, the taste, touch, smell, like this, that's five. Then they take the mind, which is controlling that, which means then you have the ten senses. Then they have, and the mind also includes the, the false ego and the intelligence. Then they take mahatattva, and they take pradhan. So pradhan is the source of it, then that transforms as mahatattva, then through the use of the mind with those tanmatras, then everything is happening. Because that's actually, you could say that that's the reason things are happening. Because of someone's mind, attraction, attachment to a particular experience, therefore that experience or that tanmatra becomes the reason for your making an endeavor. And you do that through the senses, you know, with the Mahabhutas and all this kind of thing. So that way you get 24 elements. But they're not actually catching so much. Is that it means even if they catch polluted consciousness, they'll probably just take that with the mind also. Mm-hmm. So the whole subtle body, they just take mind. Mm-hmm. And then the interaction with the gross is only done through the senses. So you just have to take the sense itself. That will include senses and the sense objects. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's so many ways you can approach. And in that way, they're all correct. But they've chosen that particular approach because that matches nicely, that moves smoothly with their philosophy all the way to the end. Mm-hmm. Right? Not that others aren't correct, it just works best with their philosophy. Mm-hmm. So with us, we can accommodate all of them, but we'll have our particular that works the best for us, because the 24 elements, then you kind of get it all, that's all there is. Mm-hmm. The other one is kind of like, it's the mind, it's you, you're going through that, you're making it all happen. Though that is what the materialist is doing, but we want to give that up, that I'm the controller, I'm the doer. They're not so worried about it like that. Maybe I'm not the material doer, but they also see that I'm the spiritual doer also. Does that make sense?
The intent is different.
The intent is different. So like that. But when you get up to the point where the soul is in its neutral state, the liberated state, but without understanding the nature of the soul as Satchitananda and an eternal servant of Krishna, then you'll never go beyond that state. Right? Because that's the only way to go beyond is if I'm servant of Krishna and my natural position is to serve Krishna through devotion by engaging my senses to please his senses, then you can move forward to prema. Right? And so when that's the whole point, then you're going to look at everything from the conditioned state up to the liberated state in the context of developing prema. Right? But now if you're looking at that neutral state, that's a goal when it can't be. Right? That's just a neutral state. Neutrality is not a goal. Neutrality is to get rid of what's bad. You don't want to bring good to neutrality. You want to bring bad to neutrality. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's just like the Swiss are famous. You know, they're known for being neutral. But they're actually famous for their cheese and their chocolate and their watches. You know, so in other words, it's the positive that's there. Neutral is nice, okay. But you're known for the positive. The positive is the actual thing, right? So, So sense, and that point that we fall from, that neutral point, wasn't in the positive of being interested in developing love for Krishna, but we get distracted. It's that we don't see that as important, we simply see dealing with the externals and getting an experience from that as important. That develops our material consciousness. Right? So from that, then we come down. So that means all these philosophies can only take it back to that neutral state, and because of that, there will be flaws in their philosophy. Because once they become neutral, it means everything else is neutral. Mm-hmm. So the reason behind things and all that is non-existent. There's no reason why Pradhan would produce anything. What's the purpose? You know, they say, oh, by proximity to the soul, but that doesn't necessarily mean. So unless there's affection and this and that, why would proximity do something? You know, because if that was the case, then when you go into the kitchen, because of proximity, then all the kitchen stuff should start making things for you. But they don't. You have to do it yourself. So it's not because your toaster loves you so much, therefore it produces toast.
Close enough.
Yes, maybe. Maybe the proxy, maybe they get right up cheek to cheek, you know, like that, pat it on the head. Nice toaster, nice toaster. Yeah, but.
When they have used logic for the Purvapaksha argument, and then when we give the Uttara, even our use logic, and from all different angles we are giving the answer. So, for them, its logic is the most important thing. Why is it that they're not accepting the logic that we
have? No, because logic's not the most important thing.
For them.
It's not the most important thing. It may be their main tool, but it's not the most important thing for them. Mm-hmm. It's the result. What's the result of using their logic? What will they get from it?
They prove their point.
No, but they've proven their point. What do they want to get from their philosophy?
They want to prove that Pradhan is...
That's the argument. What do they want to... What is the purpose that they even have a philosophy?
That they are the controllers.
Yes. So therefore, is that logical?
No.
So that's what we're saying. They use logic up to a point, and then the logic falls apart. Because once you get your gold, you care about the process anymore?
Not at all.
You know, it's just like... If you looked at it, it would be, okay, now I'm going to sit down, I'm going to consider a menu, I'm going to consider the ingredients, if need be, I'm going to go get the ingredients, then I'm going to prepare the ingredients, I'm going to arrange the kitchen, I'm going to do the cooking. After the cooking, then there's going to be the offering. After that, then there's going to be the serving, the hosting, and all that. Then after everyone's there, then it'll be the cleanup, and then the cleaning the kitchen and putting everything back. That would be just the thing, right? But we plan, okay, I want to eat this because we're hungry. We may get the stuff, or we just, adjust with what we have there, like that. And so, it's like, instead of the toast with the avocado on it, there's no avocado, so just the toast. Whatever it is, we just do. And then once we've eaten, then now it's like the kitchen's a mess, and oh, no, now this whole other thing that's unnecessary. Right? So in other words, you don't worry about it. But if you're looking at it as this is the service to Krishna, like let's say you cook in the deity kitchen, you don't think like that. But at home, you might. Especially if you're in between the ages of, 11 and 19. Then doing anything in the kitchen other than filling up your plate and walking out and eating it, then is a burden.
Even later for some.
Yes, that's that. Does that make sense? So in other words, it's a tool they use, but once they finish with that tool, then they don't need it anymore. It's like the Mayavadis. They have guru, and once they become Brahman, then they don't need the guru anymore. So the same way is they use logic, but once they become liberated, who needs logic? So that's why all of these, they'll be logical up to a point, and then there's things that they just accept because it supports their theory that I'm the controller and enjoyer. So that neutral state, but that neutral state is the materialistic neutral state.
And it is not permanent also.
It's not permanent. Yeah, that's why they always have to come back. So they can't actually get to their place and stay there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Means we're... That's why we say when the devotee becomes liberated, we use the term Brahma Bhuta.
Mm-hmm.
To separate it from liberation. So that it's understood as when the devotee comes to that neutral state, then it's with the consciousness that is positive consciousness, not negative consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So they come to the liberated state, but it's positive to develop love for Krishna. So they move forward in devotional service, right? Well, for the materialist, these materialistic philosophers, they may seemingly come to that neutral state, but they're still maintaining the materialistic mentality of I'm the controller and enjoyer. So because of that, they only can basically touch on that neutral state at best, and then they'll come back. Because the soul is Satchitananda, it has to do something, some activity that produces an effect. That's just the nature. That's what energy does. If energy is doing nothing, is it energy? Yeah, so that's the whole point. You can say, well, the earth is doing nothing. No, then if it's doing nothing, why are we sitting here? Does that make sense? Why aren't we over, in Chicago or something?
For the Vaishnavas, the liberation is like a transit place.
Yes, it's just something that you go through. It's like a door.
Yes.
Like that. So that's the thing. Is for us, is you have the material room and you have the spiritual room, and liberation is the door that you go through to get into the spiritual room.
Yes.
So it's not a goal. You know, like that. You know, so standing in a doorway is never a goal unless it's an earthquake and it's you taking that as the safe place to be.
Yeah.
Right. So these other philosophies, they're taking the doorway as the goal. How long can you stay in the doorway? And since they're standing in the doorway facing the materialistic room, then when they, you know, get bored, they'll walk back into the room. The devotees are standing in the doorway facing into the spiritual room. So as they become attracted by, then they go into the spiritual room. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Maharaj, this particular word, you know, liberation is very commonly used in India, and it has been misunderstood widely, you know, that
yes.
liberation means as these philosophies, this materialist system. But then it's only through our previous acharyas that we get to know what is the fine difference between the liberation of these schools and liberation by the Vaishnavas.
Yes. Yes. So that's the point. Only through the acharyas can we know. Is there a point, or just a comment, or?
Yeah, I'm just wondering that so many Hindus, you know, they also have their gurus, because they are not in line with the sampradayas.
Right.
That's the reason why they fail to understand.
Yes, that's the reason. Because the point is, only through the chit potency can you actually understand what's spiritual. Through the material, all you can get up to maximum is it's unlimited and unchanging. That's the maximum you can get to. And that's only by Krishna's grace. But that's the limit he'll allow. You know, it means even you're a materialist, you accept that the Supreme is unlimited and unchanging. He's fine with that. But more detail than that can only be revealed through devotion. Yeah? Okay, footnote 3. Srila Jiva Goswami's explanation to the current Sutra 222 highlights that the Shakti of the Lord, which is an inseparable part of his Swarup, is the cause of the universe. Hence, in view of Achinta Beda Veda, since Shakti and Brahman are not different, Brahman is in truth the cause of creation. Right, so it's going to be the Shakti in a generic sense. Just as Krishna in a generic sense is Brahman, his Shakti in a generic sense is the potency of Brahman. So as Krishna and his energy are non-different, then in the impersonal form, Brahman and his energies are non-different. So therefore, the Shakti is what actually does the creation. Because Brahman is unchanging. Just like Krishna is unchanging, his energies do all the work. But, you know, what's the point of being the supreme controller if your energies don't do anything? You have to do it all yourself? It's kind of like, you know what I mean? You know, there's perks, right? You know, it's got...
Go on strike.
Huh?
Go on strike.
Yeah, all the energies.
The Shakti and Brahman are different.
No, it's the same. It's just the impersonal aspect of them.
Like the Jiva is a Shakti of Brahman?
No. Jiva is a Shakti of the Swarup Shakti. The Swarup means it's internal, external, and marginal. That's the three main divisions. Right? And so then, when the jiva is not seeing the Lord in the personal, then he'll be under that control of Brahman. When he sees the, you know, Paramatma, he'll be in that. When he sees Bhagavan, he'll be in that. So the point is, Krishna and his energies are always there. It's just a matter of what's the effect of them. It means that when you think of a forest, what do you call called a forest. Which is impersonal.
Yes.
Because it's just a group of trees, but it's not like, you know, you have any particular affinity for and relation with a particular tree. Right? So that's the thing, is that the creation is just generically making 8,400,000 species and 14 planetary systems and all the variety of ways, you know, that are there. And so then, in that situation, then the living entities can, according to their taste, take part. But do they have a relationship with Brahman when they take part? No. Or the energies? No. So it's impersonal interaction. Therefore, it's just happening on that impersonal platform. It's the Brahman platform. Those who understand the Vedas may understand this point more. those who are not following the Vedas won't understand this at all, though they'll experience it. You know, just like, let's say something happens very good and you're happy. Now, the feeling of that happiness, it feels like it can go on forever. Or, let's say something happens that is very devastating, it feels like that's eternal. So, in other words, you're in contact with Brahman because that's all we deal with here. But the point is it's only at these intense points that you notice that. That's why the push on things to become more intense. We're trying to find that taste. You know what I'm saying? So those moments, it's like the moment will come here and there, and we're trying to get that kind of experience all the time. But how can you unless you have a realization of Brahman? Right? Therefore, in the Vedic philosophy, understanding that, the Brahmavadis may be able to get some idea of that, like Sukadeva Goswami and the Kumaras. They're situated on that platform. And so, but since they're on the spiritual platform and they know everything is spiritual, then when they come in contact with positive spiritual, these Bhagavan, they can immediately tell the difference. And they take up devotional service. So then they become Shanta Bhaktas. So but for the devotees, then they're seeing it all in relationship to Bhagavan. So they don't have to wait to get liberated to then make this distinction. They're already working to serve Bhagavan. And then as their realization is more, they can see Krishna in everything. So there's expanding that. So in the beginning, it's just Krishna. Right? He's a deity. Then he's a person. He has all the associates. He has all these different things as we're able to see the devotees. Then we see all this paraphernalia. We see the Dham, all these things. And then we can see how everything is connected to him. So therefore, then everything that's there is a connection to him. So we're expanding. So just like we see that we were discussing that the neophyte sees the Lord but not the devotees. Right? Means, you know, in importance. The Madhyama appreciates the devotees, you know, but makes a distinction between those who are devotees, those who are innocent, and those who are inimical. While the Uttama doesn't make those distinctions. They see everyone as servant to the Lord. And so, if they preach on that platform, then how they'll preach, it won't be on the conditioned platform. That means they won't deal on that platform. Therefore, then people, their response to it, you know, has to be because it's above their conditioning. But the problem is the example that the Uttamas follow, someone who has that face, the neophyte can't do. I mean, could we wander around with no clothes, no shelter, no nothing, not worrying about anything, food, rest, and this and that, and just be absorbed in Krishna and follow that sadhana, Sukadeva Goswami. No. Does that make sense? You know, it wouldn't be happening. It's just like Sukadeva is running out of the house, and he's just, it's all Brahman, so he's just out of that and just, you know, into absorbing himself in that Brahman platform. If we were running out of the house, we'd think, okay, now where will I go? Well, you know, I have an aunt that lives nearby. I guess I could go to her place, right? You know, like that.
Yeah.
You understand?
What I'm going to eat.
Yeah, you know, what I'm going to eat. So, yeah. you can't follow that. That's why then the Madhyamas, the Uttamas, the priests come down to the Madhya platform where they make the distinction so that you can then follow that example and it's something that you can actually do. So the Madhyama, even though it's the beginning of their advanced devotional service, the practice that they do, the external form, is the sadhana bhakti. That's why even we say rag bhakti, it's still, the form of it has to be what is the sadhana. Because it's all called sadhana bhakti. Then you have vaidhi and rag. So the external form is the vaidhi, the internal form is the rag. So even without the rag, you can still follow that external form because you're doing it for Krishna. You know, so that's the internal point. It may not be spontaneous, but it'll work. Right? And so you can progress. So the point being that the Vaishnavas, they have that understanding, so that neutral state is not a goal for them. It's just something that you, a ideal situation to be in to serve the Lord. Right. So if you're in a transcendental form without any conditioning, it's so much more natural to serve the Lord. There's nothing to get in the way. Now, the only thing that may consideration in this is your attraction as an individual to Krishna as an individual. Right? So it's that you still are a person that have to make that choice. But it's an easy choice, because how attractive is Krishna? How wonderful is Krishna and his devotees and his pastimes? So it's something that very quickly works. So just like in one lifetime you can get yourself to the point of being liberated and enter into the Lord's pastimes, you know, go back to Godhead. In one lifetime there, you can bring yourself to the platform of prema. Like that. You can take more time here, you know, or you can take more time there. But the general standard is one lifetime here, one lifetime there. Does that make sense? But the point is you're already in the pastimes. It's just a matter of you're not on the platform of prema. So then coming to that platform of prema, now that's perfect. Now you can function in Goloka. Because everyone in Goloka, they're on the platform of prema. Does that make sense? Yeah. Shanta Bhakta. What's the purpose?
Yeah, is it like is like Kanishtha Adhikari has some aspects of that, or is it like
totally no? I said Shanta Bhakta means that he has love for Krishna, but there's no sense of possession, so he's just absorbed in how, you know, special Krishna is, whatever it is, in sweetness and majesty, and it you know, depends on their taste or combination. And so they're always absorbed in being able to see Krishna, everything connected to him, and that itself is their platform of service. So it's called Shanta, it's neutral. Like that. But when you add possession, then you get servitorship. That's the point. So it's not that, you know, we're connecting the neophyte to this, and then the Madhyama, okay, well then the Madhyama, are they like, you know, Shakya Raj? Like, no, you don't need to do that. Does that make sense? Yeah. It may have elements that are there, but that doesn't mean it's the same. You know, it's just like the homeless guy does have a tin can that he cooks in. Does that mean, you know, and the guy, you know, and he lives outside at back of that, you know, that, what do you call it, you know, 3-star, you know, French restaurant. And so does that, and the guy inside, the you know, the chef, then he is using also a container to cook things in. So now are they the same? Could you explain, you know, how they're the same? You understand? Yeah, we don't extend it that far. Point is cooking has its laws, so it's going to be the same. Why, for the neophyte, even for the karmis, it's the same. Right? Mother Yashoda, the techniques of cooking, you know, there, or if you go down to Dwarka, you know, how Rukmini is cooking, or you go down to Vaikuntha, how Lakshmi Devi is cooking. You know, you come down to the material world, how, you know, Gayatri or Saraswati are cooking for Lord Brahma, you know, like this. Or you come down, you know, Indrani's cooking for Indra. Does that make sense? Draupadi's cooking for Yudhishthira Maharaj, you know, or, you know, it just keeps coming down until at some point gets to us. It's the same things. It's just that because of their love for Krishna, that's what makes it so much better. Because you have a limit on the technical skill of cooking, right? But because it's materialistic, and when you're doing it for Krishna, then it takes on that unlimited aspect. So the refinement that you can do is so much more. Because what's the motive of anybody else to cook better? They're already the best, right? If that makes sense. So the point is, Indra is not unlimited. Therefore, he doesn't require unlimited variety. He'll have a good variety, but he doesn't need an unlimited. You know, and when you get down to our level, it's just, you know, okay, you know, for dinner tonight, are we going to call the pizza place? Are we going to get a, you know, a burger? Are we going to call out for Chinese? Or, you know, should we call up that Lebanese joint? Right? And that's pretty broad, actually. For some people, it's
Bengali
either
sweet.
The
huh? Bengali sweet.
Oh yes, that's, that's from the guy in around the corner. That's from the guy around the corner. Yeah, you understand? So it's very limited. So Indra may be more, Brahma more, but Krishna's unlimited, and Indrani's not unlimited. It matches. So how much she can cook is how much he can appreciate. But Krishna is unlimited, so therefore his energies are unlimited. So what they can do, it says Radharani never cooks the same preparation twice. It's subtle adjustments. Right? It's, you know, and so therefore you cook, but every time there's something little. And she's been doing this for eternity, and she'll be doing that for eternity. So there's a lot of variety there. But that does not mean that she runs out of preparations. Oh my God, what am I going to cook now? I'm like, I guess we're going to have to make pizza. You know? Because there's nothing else. We've cooked everything, and the only thing left is pizza. But then if that is true, even if you take that as a point, now they've cooked pizza tonight, she'll never cook it again. So that means it'll happen once in the creation. So then she'll never cook it again.
Devastating.
Yeah. Janai, the discussion came up that, you know, since it's so nice and Krishna is unlimited, does he eat pizza? And then Janani Vasudev was sitting there and he says, yes, in his Sankirtan pastimes, and the Lord is eating pizza. But, you know, in Mother Jashoda's kitchen, no. But here in these pastimes, then he is.
Okay. So pizza controversy is solved.
Yes, like that.
This means that we need to eat only one type of pizza.
Yes. Yes. And if they say no, but there's so much variety of pizza, it's kind of like, go ahead, knock me out. How many? Go for it. You do. Means in the system, social system, there is kind of a stratus, and as soon as the pineapple is coming near the pizza, you're actually falling from your social position.
I'm just getting back to their position.
Yeah, well, once you're down there, but that's it. Then all you have is pineapple on pizza. You know, then there isn't anything else. So. Because I'm saying. Who's doing? Who knows? Because the ones that would be gross enough to say that, well, you run out of variety, you have to cook pizza, also would not be able to give a variety of pizza. So that's the whole point, because they don't know variety, they can't understand how it works. It's just so subtle how you do. You have, if with seven notes you can produce music and it's always different, then you have more than seven spices and you have all your techniques and your vegetables. So you have way more to work with. But so no pineapple. And ketchup. Oh no, yeah. Okay. Well, no, on the pineapple pizza, then you put some ketchup. Yes. I mean, this is I mean, it's just like it. Then you have, if you eat pineapple on pizza, then you're considered an outcast. But now Manu, having given the main outcasts, you know, like say a Brahmin man with a Shudra woman will give you a Nishada, right? And a Brahmin woman with a Shudra man will give you a Chandala, right? But now, if you combine that, then what's the next? Then you get a Swapacha. Chandala, then I'm not sure if you combine those two, so then the lowest would be the Chandala. And so if you had a Chandala man and a Nishada woman, then I think you get a Swapacha. And then there's something else, and then you get an Antarvasayin. Which is an outcast of the outcast. It means even the outcasts won't deal with these guys. So that's what happens. So already you're an outcast if you put the pineapple on the pizza. And now you start putting ketchup and all this, then you're an outcast of outcasts. Yeah, I've seen that. I have known some to do that. But at least it's Bengali. It lifts it up, you know, it's like that. So. Yeah, counteracts. You have the different karmas how to counteract.
You back on onion, then you're back in line.
It depends upon, yeah, it depends upon which pepperoni. If the Italian pepperoni, then yes. If it's the American pepperoni, then no.
And you get to Brahmana and Shudra.
Yeah. You know the difference?
No.
Italian pepperoni means it's capsicum. Mm. Bell peppers.
Yeah.
That's pepperoni. But America is sausage. That's pepperoni. Oh. So in America, pepperoni pizza is a pizza with sausage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just so you know, just in case you happen to be in New York and you look at the pepperoni and think, oh, hey, I'll get that. Don't get that.
Our place, no pepperoni.
Huh? Yeah, it's not kosher. Yeah, see? Hence the particular choice. Okay. Sorry. Just missed an enlivening discussion from the fall of the jiva to the connection of, what do you call it? The connection between the Shanta Bhakta and the neophyte devotee, then down to the various outcasts and outcasts of outcasts, depending upon what their pizza choice is.
Sounds really scientific.
Yeah, it was very scientific. Yeah. Okay. Hence, in view of Achintabheda Veda Tattva, since Shakti and Brahman are non-different, Brahman is in truth the cause of creation. Right, so it's Brahman that's going to, even though he doesn't transform, his energy is transformed, Sri Shakti Parinamabad. Adherents of Advaita philosophy claim the following. The supreme entity is knowledge, devoid of internal difference, without any other factor, neither different or similar. In Varanti Tat Tattva Viraha, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.11, this condition is expressed with the word Advaya. By use of that adjective, it is indicated the unlimited truth does not coexist with another entity of similar nature. Right? So they're trying to say there is no Shakti.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, existence would be divided up with actions of knowing something internally or externally. The Brahman in scriptures would no longer exist, since an agent would appear with senses to undertake action. And Brahman would then become material like an axe. Thus, knowledge or awareness is not endowed with Shakti, internal or external distinctions. Right? So then, what would he say? Shamshaya. Oh, no, this is the doubt here. If you propose that the Shakti...
It appears that this is our doubt.
This is our doubt.
This is
okay.
Our
doubt of theirs. Because this is, he's saying, adherents of Advaita would say this.
This is their thesis.
Okay. And this is our doubt.
Yeah.
Finally. It's always their doubt, you know, now we get it. Right?
But don't we say that theirs is always Purvapaksha and ours is something?
No, but this is Jiva Goswami's comment.
Yes.
And he's presented their philosophy, and then now he's given from our side, yes.
In this part we are discussing about how Vyasadeva directly attacks the opponent.
Ah.
Questions there.
So this Samshaya is his directly.
I mean, in the beginning we were discussing that. So now he will question each and every one then.
He'll start questioning them.
That is in Vedanta Sutra, not in the Sankarpas.
Hmm?
That is in Vedanta Sutras, that Vyasadeva is directly opposing.
Directly opposing.
That's Vedanta Sutra. This is from the Sandarvas that we are reading right now.
We're reading from the Sandarvas.
Yeah. So Jiva Goswami is proposing a samshaya from our side, and he's only giving the uttara for it, or the answer. Fine.
You're saying the same things, man.
Yes, that's the difficulty. And then I never know if it's a question or a comment. Because
yes.
It's presented in a way as if it's a question. The question is this all, the proper understanding? So, I think I only noticed that today. Okay. Shamshaya, if you propose that the Shakti arises from its Sarup, what is the Shakti of the Sarup? Is it different from or the same as Brahman? If it is different, how can it be the Sarup? If it is the same, how can it be differentiated as Shakti? How can this proposed Sarup Shakti, differentiated from Brahman, become Bhagavan endowed with six qualities? Since one entity is known alone, Dishati should only be knowledge also. Thus, variety manifesting as some pastime of Brahman cannot be possible, and therefore Narayan or Saguna Brahman is not supposed to exist the way he exists. Thus, the Mayavad theory runs in direct contradiction with reality. It is not correct to say that actions such as Mahavishnu's glancing at matter take place by Brahman's Shakti, by Brahman endowed with qualities. Is this not their doubt?
Directly opposing their doubt.
It's directly opposing their doubt.
Their philosophy. Their
so this is from which Sandarbha?
This is from Paramatma Sandarbha.
Paramatma, okay.
Sorry, Bhagavat.
Bhagavat Sandarbha. Okay, it's not correct to say that actions such as Mahavishnu's glancing take place by Brahman Shakti, by Brahman endowed with qualities. Forms of blue and yellow and divisions are forbidden to the highest entity. That's what I'm trying to figure out, but there seems to be a difference of opinion here. However, there is a description of the Lord with forearms and glowing colors. How can that be accepted? Right, so it must be them. How can there be particular objects and clothing, details of Vaikuntha and individual jivas who are aware of this, and who are all similar to the Lord? One must accept this appearance in the Supreme to be as impossible as keeping an elephant clean after a bath. Okay. That's a good example. That's what you're proposing is impossible as keeping an elephant clean after a bath. That would definitely stop them. What? The Shakti, which is perceived as effect, is false, being neither Brahman nor something other than Brahman. It does not arise from the Sarup of Brahman. When qualities are attributed to Brahman, they are merely metaphorical. Jahad, Ajahal, Lakshana can be used to identify Bhagavan. Qualities in Bhagavan being merely figurative, with the term Advaya Jnana, Brahman with no qualities. Uttara. Okay, let me just see something. Okay. So in other words, in here they claim this, and that's just giving an overview of what they're saying. Then the Shamshaya is the actual doubt. So in other words, just like we give a what do you call it? The Sutra Prakashika. So he gave a Prakashika of the what they're going to say, and then it's said, right? And then now he's giving his Uttara. Sri Vaishnavs explain as follows: even the Advaitins must accept the Brahman, the entity situated in the Sarup, has his Sarup Shakti, which is one with the supreme entity. It is necessary in order to display the effect known as the universe. Without it, there would be impossibility of liberation, since a jiva and universe could not be distinguished from Brahman. Otherwise, how do you get liberated unless you can distinguish them? Because if you say there's no distinction, then there is no there's nothing, and so therefore, why are you even having the discussion? So they're just wasting everybody's time. Yes.
Maharaj, in Jiva Goswami, first he answers in short in the Sandarbha. What is that doubt?
Right.
And then this much based on the Sarva Samvadini commentary explaining in detail.
Detail, okay. So he's given the Sandarbha, he's written the Sandarbha and then written the commentary.
Which is called Sarva Samvadini.
Okay.
So some philosophical points like this are very detailed in action.
Okay, so then in the Sandarbha itself he'll give the overview.
Oh, yes.
Okay, but in the commentary he'll give the full. So this would be, okay.
This might be the comment.
Might be the commentary. Okay. Shakti is a particular quality of an object necessary for accomplishing its effects. Shakti should be considered to arise from the sarup when the object acts as material cause, upadana, and efficient cause, nimitta. Otherwise, the object becomes meaningless as the cause which should give rise to various effects. How can it be causing an effect if it doesn't have the potency to create an effect? But you can't say that you're the cause if you have no potency to do that. Right? sense. So there's a potency to do that. Then you could, like if you say, oh, who cooked this? And you could say, oh, they cooked this. But you're going to put point at the body, which is dead matter. But the point is that there's a potency there that cooking can go on.
Mm-hmm. So how can they say they created the world?
Who?
My bodies. They claim this on the same basis. Nimitta and Upadana, they say that they are the cause, even though they don't have the potency.
That's a weakness in their philosophy. Because if they're Brahman, that means, and so therefore the cause of all this, then you can go call your friends and go beat them up for all the troubles you're getting because they're the cause of it. Mm. I'm not sure how they would consider themselves the supreme at this time, because they can cause the whole material creation, but they can't protect themselves when you come with your friends. You know, so much for being the supreme. Yeah. Even in Vivartavad, shell is accepted as the cause for the illusion of silver. Right? So even though they say it's illusion, but there's still a cause why you say it's silver. Right? Because you're not saying a piece of dirt is silver. You're saying shell is silver. Mm-hmm. Brahman and nothing else is the cause of the universe. Thus, the Shakti of the Lord Swarup must be accepted. Is Brahman the cause of illusion? If it is not, the illusion must arise from ignorance. But then, is this not accepting something other than Brahman? While you maintain that only Brahman exists, right? That's their philosophy. If Brahman is the cause of illusion, it must be concluded that pure Brahman, the shelter of knowledge, has Shakti. Right? Because the illusion is also a Shakti. So that's all coming. So then there must be the positive Shakti. Otherwise, how can you get liberated? Because through the illusory, the illusion is putting you in illusion. How are you going to use that to get out? So there must be a potency of knowledge and all these other processes. So then Brahman must have Shakti. Right? Shankara also says this: a particular Shakti which determines one particular effect arising from the cause will not produce its particular effect. If it is something other than the particular cause of the effect, or if it is non-existent, then the objects would not be distinguished from another object, or would not be distinguished from the object not existing at all. You can't. If it doesn't have something different, there's not energy, there's not some potency, there's not some. How do you tell the difference between things? Right? Mm-hmm. Like that. Because otherwise it's transformed, that means there's a potency, because otherwise it would be exactly the same. You know, the pot has not transformed, it's just the pot. But if we find from the pot, then there's all kinds of little pots and all that. And there's one pot that's telling it to quit being so lazy. Then you know that, you know, it's got the whole... Right? Yeah? No?
Family.
Family. The family, the pot family. Then the object would not be distinguishable from another object. Okay. It follows that Shakti is identical with the cause, and that the effect produced from the Shakti is identical with the cause. Sharir Gabashya 2.1.18.
He accepts the Shaktis.
See, the thing is that Shankara, if you understand how he's saying it, then he's not actually opposing the Veda. He just presents it in a way that it appears it is. And for those who want to be cheated, they take it in that way. But the commentaries and the works of anybody following Shankara, that's just pure nonsense. So, technically, Shankara won't have that defect. But the problem is how he's written it is such that if you're in any way affected by ignorance, you'll become bewildered. So that's why then we don't study it. The acharyas have gone through, taken out the points like this and that. It's just like that Shankaracharya wrote one book glorifying. It's not such a small book. I'm not sure how big it is, 100 and some odd verses or something. It's glorifying Radha and Krishna. You know, the origin of everything. All this kind of thing like this. And if you ask the Shankarites about the book, you know, if you know the name, you say, Prabhupada mentions it, you say the name, they'll accept he wrote the book. But I remember one Mayavadi, you know, I mean, we're talking, you know, I say, flag waving, card carrying, you know, the Shankarites in the mutt kind of Shankarites. And they'll say, because we went to a particular mutt to ask if they had the book, because they had all the books. And they said, yeah, he wrote that book, but we have no idea why. It's one of those, why would he do that? You want to say why he did that?
It's like Shankaracharya saying the same sentence but stressing on the wrong.
Yes, you just stressed the wrong point.
There was even one Vaishnava commentator who wrote presenting the whole Vaishnava philosophy based only on Shankara's writings.
Oh, really? So he just took all of his teachings and then put it together to prove. Okay, and then prove the Vaishnav conclusion. Yes. It's fun, that stuff. Commenting on Brahma Sutra 222, Shankara says, one may propose that the Atma, endowed with the body, cannot initiate action. Since Atma performs no action, Atma being knowledge alone. That is not so, since it is suitable for Atma to cause action, even though it is without action itself, as is the case of a magnet, which does not move but causes the movement of iron, or the case of form, which provokes movement in the eye. Okay, yeah, the form. Form's doing nothing, but it provokes movement in the eye. So you see all the patterns moving in the eye, though the form itself is not moving. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So this seems to be doing the same thing, using Shankara's points to establish the... So they'll just catch certain things and then leave the others. So that's going to make them even more confused.
Yes. Yeah.
The following argument may be given. Ignorance transforms into the universe as its effect. But both ignorance and the universe are actually non-existent. Oh, except. Thus, Brahman Shakti, which produces the universe, should also be non-existent. So their idea is nothing exists, so it won't be exist. That is not so. If what you claim is true, ignorance which produced the false universe would also be non-existent. So there is no ignorance. If ignorance does not exist, it is hard to avoid Shakti, which is beyond ignorance and its effects to be the producer of the world. So if ignorance didn't produce it, right, because it's not there, then either it's not there or something else did it, which is beyond, and it's, okay. The sun is not destroyed when the object it illuminates disappears. The sun remains. To propose otherwise is ridiculous. Useless is half a chicken, which can no longer produce eggs. Bhagavad Sandarbha Anucheda 121. Okay, so that brings us to Bhagavad verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.25.9. By his glance, the Supreme Personality of Godhead enables the modes of material nature to act as the causes of universal creation, maintenance, and destruction. The Supreme Lord is unlimited and beginningless, and although he is one, he has manifested himself in many forms. How can human society understand the ways of the Supreme? 3.22.12. Maitreya said, when the equilibrium of the combination of the three modes of nature was agitated by the unseen activity of the living entity, by Mahavishnu and by the force of time, the total material elements are produced. Right? So you do see is the equilibrium is there in the three modes, in Pradhan. So that's agitated by the glance of Mahavishnu, force of time, and then by the living entities there, the unseen activity of the living entity. Right? Because the living entity, you know, is not technically actively doing something, but by their influence, it's going on. just like the magnet. It's not doing anything, but by its influence, then other things are move, objects are moving.
Yes.
Right? So because of the desire of the living entity to be involved, therefore, then you see the transformation of the world. Does that make sense? But it's Mahavishnu's glance, the time factor, that's what makes it. Then when it gets down to Brahma's creation, then from there we see then the living entities are placed and are involved according to their particular interests, their karma.
Maharaj, can you say that this unseen activity is the desire of that jiva as well as the previous karmas in the...
Is the unseen activity the desire? And the previous, you would have to say it's the desire, because the previous activities, point is there is no previous material activity, right, when you begin the process. Otherwise, if you are including the samsara, that's going to be why they're in a particular situation, but the motive behind that is their desire, because otherwise when they change the desire, then they step out of the cycle of samsara. So it's not that samsara itself can be the actual effect in the way of the living entity. That samsara, that is what's controlled by the modes of nature. So Maya is controlling that. But the jiva has their choice. Yeah? 3:26:19. After the Supreme Personality of Godhead impregnates material nature with his internal potency, material nature delivers the sum total of the cosmic intelligence, which is known as Hiranyamaya, because right, then it has the potential to produce. This takes place in material nature when she is agitated by the destinations of the conditioned souls. Footnote 4. Srila Prabhupada smashes the modern theory of creation that life comes from matter and validates that the Supreme Lord transmits spirit into Prakriti, which gives rise to varieties of species. Hence, spirit arises from the Supreme Spirit. The impregnation of material nature is described in Bhagavad Gita 14.3. Material nature's primal factor is the Mahatattva, or breeding source of all varieties. This part of material nature, which is called Pradhan, as well as Brahman, is impregnated by the Supreme Personality and delivers varieties of living entities. Material nature in this connection is called Brahman because it is perverted reflection of the spiritual nature. So this way, then, it's called Brahman. So Brahman is the cause, but at the same time, is the reason that that's happening is because of the Supreme Brahman. And being a potency of the Supreme Brahman, that also makes it Brahman. So in either way, however you're applying it, you have to see where it goes back to. Right? Even if you're calling that material energy is Brahman and is the source, but the point is that potency for functioning in that aspect of Brahman is still coming from Krishna.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense?
Maharaj, in the same way the jiva is also Brahman?
Yes. Because they're part and parcel of Krishna. So they're Brahman. But they only act as Brahman when they actually connect themselves to Krishna in a relationship. Yes. Otherwise they act as matter.
Yes.
Though they're not.
Yes.
So,
yes. So there is a Supreme Brahman, Prakriti and jiva, and there is some other same Brahman?
Means you have... the Supreme Brahman, you have internal potency Brahman, external potency Brahman, and jiva is Brahman. So you could say those four main categories.
Okay.
But otherwise, if you're looking at going back, you have the Supreme Brahman and the Sarup Shakti. So that's what's being discussed in these. So when you understand that the Brahman is inherently has Shakti, so that
yes.
Sarup Shakti is there. Otherwise, how does anything get done? How is anything accomplished?
Yes. Okay.
It is described in the Vishnu Purana that the living entities belong to the spiritual nature. The potency of the Supreme Lord is spiritual. And the living entities, although they are called marginal potency, are also spiritual. The living entities are not spiritual, the description of impregnation by the Supreme Lord would not be applicable. The Supreme Lord does not put his semen into that which is not spiritual. But it is stated here that the Supreme Person puts a semen into material nature. This means that the living entities are spiritual by nature. After impregnation, material nature delivers all kinds of living entities, beginning from the greatest living creature, Lord Brahma, down to the insignificant ant, in all varieties of form. In Bhagavad Gita 14.4, material nature is clearly mentioned as Sarva Yoni Shu, right? So the source of all the living entities. This means that of all varieties of species, demigods, human beings, animals, birds, and beasts, whatever is manifested, material nature is the mother, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the seed-giving father. Generally, it's experienced that the father gives life to the child, but the mother gives its body. Although the seed of life is given by the father, the body develops within the womb of the mother. Similarly, the spiritual living entities are impregnated into the womb of material nature. But the body being supplied by material nature takes on many different species and forms of life. The theory that the symptoms of life are manifested by the interaction of the 24 material elements is not supported here. The living force comes directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is completely spiritual. Therefore, no material scientific advancement can produce life. It's just not going to happen. The living force comes from the spiritual world and has nothing to do with the interaction of the material elements. Okay. Okay. Then Sutra 223. Purvapaksha. So this is an already coming up with an argument. They're starting with an argument. Okay. Milk changes into yogurt by itself. Water released from a cloud, having one taste, develops sweet taste if it falls on a mango tree, or sour taste if it falls on a different tree. Pradhan also transforms into different bodies and earth planet because of the various karmas of the jiva. So now the sutra. Payom bhuvach chait tatrapi. Payas, milk, ambu, water, vat, like, chait, if, tatra, there, api, also. If you say that pradhan changes by itself, just as milk becomes yogurt or water develops various flavors, there must be a conscious regulator in that case also. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, why would it be that it falls on one and the other? It gives that taste. Who's regulating that? Otherwise, everything could taste like anything, right? You know, you go take the banana, cut it up, put it on your plate, and then you eat it, and then it tastes like durian or something. You know it's going to taste like banana. That means someone's controlling that.
That understanding is very shallow.
Yes, yes. But they're very intelligent. Mm. They just apply super intelligence to shallow philosophies. But Sutra Prakashita. Herein, the sutrakar, as in the previous sutra, puts further emphasis on the presence of a sentient being, Sri Govinda Basra, Siddhanta. Even in milk or water, there is conscious controller causing action. The transformation does not place by itself, as can be inferred from the case of a moving chariot, which must have a driver, though not seen. That milk and water have a controller is proven in the Shruti describing Antaryami Brahman, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, footnote 5. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur provides evidence from Shastras proving that innate matter acts only when initiated by the animate being. Someone may ask, in what form or with what potency does the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond the modes of nature and whose form is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss, act to create the material universes? So, Maya Shaktir Asid Gunavati Paravara Karya Rupa Cha. Matter is the illusory potency, Maya, which controls the modes of nature and creates a variety of forms and actions, from the lowest to the highest. Here the Supreme Lord's potency is named Maya. In the Svetasvatara Upanishad 4.10, It is said, mayam tu prakritim vidyan mayinam tu maheshwaram. Although maya, illusion, is false or temporary, the background of maya is the supreme magician, the personality of Godhead, who is Maheshwara, the supreme controller. In the Sweta Suptara Upanishad, like here, Maheshwara. Okay, now if you have a regular Hindu, what will that mean?
Shiva.
But they're saying the Maha Ishwara. So who is the Maha Ishwara?
Krishna.
Right? Shiva's an Ishwara, but he's not the Maha Ishwara. So that's Krishna. So that's how, when these various Puranas, they're written, when it says in the mode of ignorance, passion, or goodness, they're not actually written in that mode. They're written in language that attracts people of that mode. But otherwise, when pure Vaishnavas read it, they see the absolute truth. But the materialists, because of their proclivity, they will see things in relationship to, how they want to see, in the particular mode. Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore, those who want to be God, then they will see Shankara's works as saying that you can be. In the Svetasvatara Upanishad 4.5, it is said, an unborn man enjoys an unborn red, white, and black woman who bears many children like herself. Another unborn man first enjoys and then forsakes her. Okay, that's the Vedic language. Translator's note. The unborn woman is the material nature. The colors red, white, and black are the modes of passion, goodness, and ignorance. So is there something here that they're not telling us about the American flag? The many children are the ingredients of the material universes. The first unborn man is the conditioned soul. The second unborn man is the soul who, after trying to enjoy matter, finally and renounces the world and attains liberation. Right. In his Govinda Bhasya commentary on Vedanta Sutra, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan explains, at the time of cosmic devastation, the three modes of material nature become subtle and unmanifested. This is called tama, the unborn root of matter. Right? Because ignorance is already there. Right? So when we say ignorance, there's the ignorance of the manifest modes of nature, but there's the ignorance that they're before the modes of nature, that they're based on. Because otherwise, for them to function, there has to be potency. Right? So for the three modes of nature to bind you, that means they have to have the potency to bind. So that means if there's a potency to bind, that means there has to be a Shaktiman that has that potency to bind. Right? So then that ignorance is already there. Does that make sense? So from that ignorance, then you get the three kinds of ignorance, in the material energy. So ignorance and goodness, ignorance and passion, ignorance and ignorance. Right. So then you have the Taijasa, Tamasa, and Vaikarika. Right. So that'll be the three forms of the mode of ignorance known as the modes of nature. Funny. Okay, just sticks a camera above. You can't even see it that takes a picture.
Maharaj, we can say this is the original ignorance.
Yes, the original ignorance. It's avidya. So like there's avidya shakti, there's an avidya shakti. So from that avidya shakti, then all this will come. Yes. So the living entity is in the neutral state. He's neither under the avidya or avidya. His natural is to be under the knowledge. But he chooses to take only part of the truth. Yes. Right. If you only have part of the truth, that's ignorance. Yes. Right? Because you have to deal with something. So when you take Krishna's creation with Krishna, then you have the actual truth. Yes. So then you're under the avidya shakti. Yes. But if you only take the creation without Krishna, then you have the avidya shakti. And then you have material consciousness. Right. Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura Premada ki.